The Ira Kaufman Podcast is presented by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford dealers, family-owned and operated since 1960, a mile north of the stadium on Del Mabry Highway. The incredible Memorial Day savings are on now, today, Memorial Day, but they will be continuing. So check them out all through this week, BillCurryFord.com. Remember, General Manager Sean Sullivan, he's got the Ira Kaufman discount for you in his pocket. You just have to ask for it. Find Sean at the website, at the dealership, the Giant, huge showroom, biggest service department in Florida, a mile north of the stadium on Del Mabry, and reach out to him through the website, though, if you want to, email or direct message, and he'll take care of you. He'll advise you, just like your family, BillCurryFord.com. They present all of Ira's work at JoeBucksFan.com. The three of us, Lee DeCamper, Ira Kaufman, and myself, Steve Isbitz, we all drive Bill Curry Ford vehicles, from used to Ira bought out his lease, Lee bought a new truck. Bill Curry Ford, you can trust them since 1960. And Florida's Elite Restoration, FloridasEliteRestoration.com. Get to their website so you can understand why they need to be your first phone call when disaster strikes your home or your property, flood, water damage, fire, mold, storm damage. They are licensed mold remediation specialists. You don't want to mess around with somebody who doesn't know what they're doing. They've got decades of experience on the insurance side of the business. That means they know all the tricks, all the angles to make sure you're going to get what you need from your insurance company to restore your property and get it back to where it needs to be. And they can do everything. They're a one-stop shop. Learn about them today. FloridasEliteRestoration.com. Owner Josh Martin has the Ira Kaufman discount for everybody as well. Mention Ira or Joe Bucks Fan when you first call, and you'll get $500 back if you need them after your free inspection. Doesn't get easier than that. FloridasEliteRestoration.com. Check out their 5-star Google reviews. Okay, Bucks fans, special edition, extra bonus edition, whatever you want to call it, of the Ira Kaufman Podcast today. We sat down with Trent Cooper, the director of Raise the Flags, 50 years of Buccaneers football. And while that's been on Amazon, it debuts tonight, Monday, on NFL Network. Episodes 1 and 2, 8 o'clock, and then 9 o'clock, and all the 10 episodes all week long. So great time to catch it if you don't have Amazon. Great time to let a friend know. Great time to DVR it. Great time to rewatch it, because every time I rewatch it, I see something new. So great stories here. Great insight behind the scenes. You know, you should watch it anyway, but you should listen to this. So you really want to watch it, and you might watch it with a little different eye and a little different understanding. Here we go. All right, Sage. So look, we've been watching this fantastic documentary, Raise the Flags, Amazon Prime, 50 years of Buccaneers football, docuseries, whatever you want to call it. It's like 9-10 hours of just ultimate ecstasy.
I can't turn it off, Steve. I can't turn it off.
It is fantastic, and it's the kind of thing
I'm supposed to take Cosmo for a walk. I can't turn it off. Cosmo's waiting. I said, you got to wait till the end of the episode.
Got to hold it. Don't you got a pause button at your house, Ira?
Not on this thing.
Not on this thing. It is fantastic. And, you know, we're Bucks fans, right? We're not hiding that. And we're media as well. I'm looking at how could they not have concluded that? Not included that. But I'm also loving every second of it. Like, I feel like you could still do another 50 years with the footage that's probably left over.
That's right.
You know, in so many different ways, which is really cool that we have Trent Cooper, the chief director of the whole project, here with us to talk about it and try to understand behind the scenes. Trent, welcome to the Ira Kaufman Podcast. I know it's the highlight of your career. And how's it going?
Hey, it is a highlight. I just want to say, you know, I listen to you guys 2 or 3 times a week. I don't think I miss a show. So I'm a fan of what you do.
He's jogging through Central Park, Lee, and he's got the podcast.
You get me through my jogs. I always tell Ira I'm cranking out one of my 14-minute miles listening to the pod.
You know, it's funny. You mentioned that to me as well, or Ira mentioned it. He forwarded it, something from you, and I'm like, is he race walking or is he jogging? I wasn't really sure.
Yeah, the miles aren't fast, but you guys help pass the time.
This is the way I want to introduce Trent Cooper. This is a man who was given an unlimited budget and went over it for this project.
Okay, George Allen. Okay.
First of all, that is not true. There is no unlimited budget.
It looks like you didn't spare any expense. That's what it looks like.
That is a compliment.
So, Trent, you're a Bucks fan, and the fans are going to love that aspect of it because you don't think that, hey, the guy putting this whole thing together is a Bucks fan. So maybe give us your history as a Bucks fan and how you even got to this whole thing.
Yeah, well, first of all, why does it matter, right? You know, all of us are Bucks fans, but I happen to also be a storyteller. So sometimes I have to check my storytelling or my Bucks fan card at the door and put my storytelling hat on. But the reality is I never wanted to lose track of the fact that my fandom is driving the passion for this project. I hope that you feel that. And people that have seen it are telling me that they do. I hope that you feel the passion in every scene because it's really there. I feel a responsibility to all of the people that grew up when we did loving this team. We desperately wanted to do this right. And doing this right meant it couldn't be a fluff piece. We had to tell the whole story, warts and all. It is unfiltered in every way. We earned that trust with not only the Glazers, but also the people that were interviewed. You know, you're going to sit down with John Gruden for a day or half a day, and you got to earn his trust. And the same with Coach Dungy and Arians and all of the ones that gave us that trust. So a lot of it is earned by our intentions, what we're trying to do. And at the end of the day, it sort of comes back to who do we want to see this and how do we want them to feel?
How many interviews, Trent? How many?
We stopped at 100, and I'll let Lee guess who the 100th interview was.
Culver House's widow.
No, she's gone.
Great guess, though. Great guess.
I'll say ended with Greg Schiano.
Okay. And what do you think, Steve?
Whoa, the last interview.
If you were going to save one for the very end, what would it be?
Todd Bowles?
Close. I think he might have been 99.
Oh.
That's a good guess.
The last one?
The very last one.
Joe Glazer.
No, he was number three.
The last one.
The last one.
That's a tough one. I mean, why would you pick the last one? Is it maybe a next generation Glazer or a rookie on the team?
They said close with Bulls. So how about Levante David?
How about Thomas Edward Patrick
Brady?
Wow.
Ah, last.
Where'd you do that one?
His house.
Oh, really?
Which one? I'm assuming he has seven.
The one in
Miami?
Yeah.
What was in the documentary is the beginning of the fraying of the relationship between Rich McKay and the Glazers. And I had never heard that stuff before, and it all dealt with Marvin Lewis. And all of a sudden, the idea that Lewis was coming to the Bucks kept gathering momentum in the media. And I don't know if Rich was planting those things, but you did have the Glazers addressing that. That was very interesting.
Yeah. I mean, listen, you're talking about 50 years of history. Think about all the drama of this week.
Yeah.
With this team that you guys are working on. Can you imagine how much drama there's been in 50 years?
Oh, sure.
And then think about how much of it you're like, you know what? So-and-so has a different perspective, and so-and-so has a different perspective, and Dumig said this, and so like everybody's got a different take on how the big moments in our franchise history went down. Everybody has access to different information. I talked to 100 people. This is what I learned. This is the essence of the story I wanted to tell. I wanted to focus on what I had in front of me.
Bruce Allen has kept a very low profile. How'd you get Bruce Allen, and was it difficult?
I got to tell you, it wasn't that difficult to get anyone. And the reason it wasn't difficult is people think fondly of this organization, and they think very fondly of these owners, and they want to be part of the story.
Even fired coaches.
All of the fired coaches.
Wow.
Even somebody like Jameis, and we didn't renew his contract, and yet he sat with me for 2 or 3 hours and went on the full journey of his experience. Because the reality is this: everybody came here for a time in their life that was special, and in the beginning of that time, there was probably a rise, and it was the honeymoon period, and things, you know, even for Rich McKay and everybody we're talking about right now, it was the golden era. And there's a point in all of our lives where things shift, things change, and it starts to turn
south.
But that's just part of our story. And they understood that we're all a piece of this bigger story. And I think Rich is a great example. Rich first enters this story through the lens of his father. You know, John McKay is his father. Rich is at times a ball boy on the sidelines. So he has this unique access to 1976 and the rise of 1979. He also has this unique access to his father's failing health when he sort of lost his passion for the game and was fading back. And we're able to hear that story through Rich because John's not with us anymore.
I really enjoyed one aspect of it, just something that was sort of newer to me, and as long as we're talking about Rich McKay, is his brother playing for the team.
Yeah.
And the perspective of that and how he, you know, saw the team through different lenses like that.
Yeah.
I thought that was very interesting. And I'm going back to just to wrap a bow on the demise of Coach Dungy and hiring John Gruden. I thought it was kind of interesting. You know, Joel Glazer told the story from his eyes of how that deal went down and the middle of the night conversation. And there's a lot of great stuff in there. Just as a layman Bucks fan, as we sit here, the storytelling is fantastic. Now, I mean, I know what I would have wanted to see more, but it doesn't take away from the story. How do you make those decisions?
And the visuals are great with the fax machine. I don't know where you came up. It's funny. There's parts of this documentary that are also very humorous when you put in all these things together.
The music's great. It just, you know, it grips you.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, the number one thing you're wrestling with every day when you turn on your computer is, how do I get more Ira Kaufman in the show? Or do I have enough, or am I going to have to hear it from him that I don't have enough? Or did I get the right camera? Did I get the lighting right? You know, storytelling has a rhythm. A lot of the decisions about what is kept and cut is based on the rhythm of that story. And if you bog down for too long in details, it flatlines and you get bored.
Yeah.
Just like a podcast, right? So it's got to have the sparks and it's got to have the highs and lows.
And Trent, one thing I noticed that comes through all 10 episodes is these interviews, and there's a lot of them, they're short. You're not going to have a guy sit there for 2.5 minutes and tell a story.
No, you gotta move.
I think that was a deliberate thing on your part.
You got to keep moving. You don't want to sit on any one person for longer than 15 seconds. You got to keep going. And the other thing you might have noticed is there's no narrator, right? So a lot of the documentaries, at least that we grew up watching on ESPN and so forth, they always had that, and NFL films, they always have that narrator who covers a lot of the context. And then you use the interviews to just kind of pop in with emotion. We give our context through our interviews with a lot of times with people like you. So we used a lot of the media to give us the meat and potatoes so that the other people can come in and
or a newspaper account that's on the screen.
Or clippings and stuff like
that.
And there's an art form to that. It's very contemporary. There's an edge to this series. We wanted this to feel fresh and sort of in your face and contemporary. And you'll see that in the style. There's a lot of style to it.
How helpful was Fox 13 and their archives?
Great. Great. Them and WFLA was fantastic. I think everybody feels the same way, and that is there's something special about this 50th. You know, you kind of take a second and go, wait a minute. We've been doing this for a minute. We love this team. We've been covering this for a while. Let's help these guys and let's do this right. And I felt a lot of support from local media across the board. Look at the special thanks at the end of the, you know, I know you're looking for your name in the credits there, Ira.
Ira asked you about length of interviews because he's trained to appreciate book TV interviews on C-SPAN. So 15-second bites are jarring.
Yeah.
We're talking to Trent Cooper, chief director of the Rays.
Chief director.
Well, what am I supposed to call you?
Director.
Director. Well, there could be
storyteller.
10 directors, right?
I'm the only director.
The commander of the Raise the Flags project, the docuseries, and I hope every fan watches it because it's just phenomenal. I mean, the storytelling, and it just grips you. You talked about not having long interviews and, you know, got to move through it. I really thought the way the whole Joe Jurevicius, his struggle was handled, and the emotion captured there, that felt a little longer, and that was really, really well done. Maybe you can talk about how making the decision to let that go.
Listen, so many of these stories I experienced as a fan, and I only knew what I knew. You know, I knew what I saw on TV. I knew what you guys wrote about, but I didn't know the real. You don't really know the story until you sit with somebody. So what Joe went through, you know, Bucks fans know it was the week leading up to the
Eagles game,
the NFC Championship in their first Super Bowl season, and Joe and his wife were having their first child, and there were terrible, terrible complications. And, you know, that young man, Michael Jurevicius, was fighting for his life. And it was a very, very difficult time for Joe and his wife. It was a difficult time for Joe's teammates. I think the fans felt it deeply. And so when you're doing a project like this, you have to talk to that family well ahead of time to see if they're interested in sharing what they went through. And I think that because we'll walk away from it. If they're not interested in sharing, we don't need to do this. And I think what we all agreed on, and him and his wife, they're just great people, is we want to honor Michael's memory. And he's a little warrior that we all loved, and we never want to forget him. And he's a big part of our collective story. And I asked them to trust me that we would handle this the way we did. And they did. And they, you know, Joe got on a plane and came down here.
Wow.
And he sat maybe in this room or the room next door.
Yeah. You know, Trent, one thing that comes through all 10 episodes is how emotional people got on the chair. Not me. Yeah. But not just Joe Juravicius, but all Stott's crying. You don't get to see that very often. John Lynch is on the verge of tears talking about his neck injury and his departure from the Bucks. Sap, it's very emotional.
Yeah. Well, try to put yourself in their shoes, right? They put their heart and soul into their time here. They gave everything they could to this franchise. So when you're asking them to reflect on that time, and it's not in the moment, like you guys are interviewing guys, you're getting guys in the locker room, it's in the moment. We're talking about what happened last night. Nobody's going to cry talking about what
they
happened
should.
Last night. Right? But if it's been 20 years and you're going back and you're reflecting, there are things that are incredibly emotional to go through. I mean, you talked about Allstott. I mean, what he went through. Is he the great warrior of our generation? And at a certain point, the warrior, it's time for the warrior to hang up his cleats.
One thing that came through to me that I got to ask you, Trent, his disdain for John Gruden seemed to just scream right through the screen. Did you feel that? Is that an intelligent takeaway or no?
Yeah. I mean, listen, I think the way to think of it is think of it as like a big family, right? So if you're part of a big family, you have siblings, whatever, there are times where there's conflict and not everybody sees everything eye to eye and they butt heads. But at the end of the day, they're still family and they still love each other. That's what I think. And I don't want to put words in their mouths, but that, I think that that's what it is with Gruden and Allstott. These are two of the great warriors of our history and the most beloved guys in our history. And they didn't always see eye to eye and they butted heads a little bit, but man, they want it all together. And you saw them, their arms around each other, taking pictures at Simeon's thing. Like, I think we're good. As a family, when you're a family, you dust it up a little. I think Ira probably dusted it up with his siblings.
Trent, Gruden's a central figure. He's really a singular figure here. Look, it's not a 10 parts on John Gruden, but...
Could be.
He didn't want to talk about his decaying relationship with Rich McKay. He said, I'll let Rich talk about that. Wow. He didn't want to get into that. Yeah. And that's not like Gruden that much. I thought the stuff with Gruden and Keyshawn Johnson was tremendous. Yeah. And I'll tell you why. Because we always hear it from Gruden's point of view, but you got Keyshawn Johnson to give his point of view, and I got to tell you, he had a point. He had a point.
He let it fly. X-rated. You might have to put your hand on the remote if you got kids that are watching, because there's a lot of bleep, bleep, bleep going on there.
But, talk about the editing process and how complex this was once the interviewing was finished.
Well, also, interviews are only part of it.
Yeah,
right?
There's
also all the visual storytelling, which is a huge element of what we do. There's all the archival.
Yeah.
So you think about NFL Films, who was our partner on this. We're constantly getting all those clips from them and back and forth. And what do you have? Do you have this? Do you have that? And we're fighting for all that. But then we're going after all this third-party archival footage. We might go to a local TV station in Miami who might have done a Warren Sapp story because he's from Miami or whatever. Like, we really try to get out of the box. Even though we had a lot of partners in this market, we try to find other partners, other, because we want to show the fans something they've never seen before.
Nelson Lewis, the chief of media here with the Bucks, is sitting with us. But, you know, we're not allowed to shoot video of practice.
I know where this is going.
Most parts of practice.
I know where this is going.
Right? So it's not, we could, but the Bucks don't want us to, and a lot of teams are like that. So, and of course, you know, yes, we can shoot certain parts of, but not 11 on 11 and things like that. But the fans in training camp can, right? They can just sit there and take pictures all day, put them on social media, whatever. So the famous Ryan Jensen blowing his knee out with, you know, Logan Hall rolling him up, and the nightmare of that is basically, it's like the, you know, the Kennedy assassination Zapruder film there. of what happened, and it's fan video that captured that critical moment in the franchise that would have probably never been captured otherwise. Because I assume if you had team video of that.
We had team video of that.
Then you, if it was better, you might have used it.
It wasn't better.
Yeah.
So wow.
I thought that was really really interesting.
Team video is not better. And it's just different angles and the clip. The, whoever the fan was shot it right.
How fortunate were you that the Super Bowl, the first Super Bowl winning Bucks, that team was full of personalities.
Yeah.
How lucky you were you with that?
Incredibly lucky. Because you honestly, you could do a whole hour on any one of them.
Yeah.
And that you were asking, sorry, I didn't really answer your question about how difficult the edit is. I'll give you an example. So with that first Super Bowl, I think WFLA gave Rondé Barber a camera and said, hey, take this with you on the airplane when you go to San Diego. And they might have also had the same camera when they went to Philly for the NFC Championship. Imagine that.
Wow.
Now, Rondé had the pick six, the greatest play in Bucs history. He also had the camera. You know what I'm saying? Like, we don't realize he had that responsibility as well. So
getting off the bus and everything. Yeah. Yeah, the whole thing.
When we got our hands on that footage, I remember the moment. That's when I thought this thing just went next level. Because you are – we all saw The Last Dance, the Michael Jordan Bulls. And when you're able to see that inside archival home movie stuff that no one's ever seen, it just takes you – it transports you to a place you've never been. So you're talking about these incredible characters, and I'm seeing – a moment of Warren Sapp right before the Super Bowl in the locker room hugging Malcolm Glazer, and they're both chill and they're calm, and it's like, yeah, let's get
it
done.
Yeah, I've
never
seen that before.
Are you kidding me?
I've never seen that before.
And then you look behind them, and there's a dry erase board with all of the countdown of everything they're supposed to do right before, and then it says kickoff.
Yeah, it says kickoff. Yeah.
You're getting goosebumps.
Yeah.
Wow.
And you're seeing Martin Gramatica is kneeling to pray. And,
nervous
and
as hell.
Nervous
Gramatica.
As hell.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're seeing Derek Brooks stalking back and forth in that locker room. You see Allstott by himself down the hallway, just collecting himself. We've never seen any of this stuff. And it's all kind of grainy and home movie. And so when we found that, you're asking about the editing. Suddenly you start shifting. I can't make this 50 episodes. It's crazy. 10's a lot of episodes, right?
Sure.
So you have to weed the garden a little bit. So you fall in love with one thing. And ultimately what you're falling in love with is the thing that makes you feel the most. And that immediately goes to the top. And then that other thing that is just facts and details, leave that for Wikipedia.
Talk about your editing crew and the man hours that it took to put this thing together.
So usually, and some of them traded kind of moved in and out, but we almost always had six editors going around the clock.
Six editors.
For
I believe it.
8 or 9 months. And like the sixth guy is kind of like the Three Stooges, where sometimes, you know what I mean? Remember they had, what was his name? Shep would come in, but it would be Curly.
So around the clock. So you're saying we're talking teams of shifts and it's
going. No, not okay. That. When I say around the clock, I mean like.
Every day.
By the way, this is what tortures me. So half of them are on the West Coast, half are on the East Coast.
Sure.
So I got to be kind of. You know,
you're the one
Midwest.
I got to do both coasts.
You're the
round
the clock guy. Yeah.
They put in, you know, 12, 13 hour days, whatever coast they're on. And as we got towards the end and, you know, they announced that we're going to be on Amazon, we weren't done.
What one story comes to mind that you regret? I wish we could have squeezed that one in.
I hate that we didn't do this. I love Hardy Nickerson. And I knew as a fan, we felt the shift started with him.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right. And yes. And he came from Pittsburgh. He was part of that first free agent class that Reggie White was in. And we couldn't believe that the Bucks had signed Hardy Nickerson. And he came in and he immediately overnight brought a toughness to the softest defense in the world.
But this is during the playoff drought.
Yeah. This is during the curse.
The curse.
Doug Williams curse years.
That's right.
When we were suffering and finally we had something to be proud of. And what we love so much is the folklore. The story of him picking a fight with Keith McCants and whooping his ass in the weight room and like laying down the law. By the way, let me just cut to the chase why it's not in, and then I'll tell you the story. So it's not in because, again, you're talking about editing and storytelling. You can't introduce too many characters at the same time. Like you had to – in episode 3 is about Sapp, Brooks, Lynch. And as badly as I wanted to put in Hardy's backstory, the minute I put it in there – it tips the scales and it's too much and everything goes flat. So I couldn't do it. And it was driving me crazy because I love him so much. But he's all over the film, and he's amazing, and he gives incredible insight. But I don't put his backstory in, and that bums me out. But the story, not backstory, but this weight room story, because I love it so much. But the story that we had always heard as Bucks fans is that day one, Hardy Nickerson comes in, and guys aren't working hard enough in the weight room, and he picks a fight with the late Keith McCants, who was a first-round draft pick from Alabama, right?
Injury problems for McCants.
Had injury problems and a good dude, but he wasn't working hard enough in Hardy's mind. And Hardy, you know, whooped his ass right there in the weight room, and there's suddenly a new sheriff in town. And there's a new standard for how hard
we're
going to work.
No accountability. That's right.
And if you think of like Bruce Arians and so many others, there's been so many turning points in our franchise's history where somebody comes in and says, this is no longer acceptable.
Mr. Brady.
JPP.
JPP's one of those guys.
Just a quick timeout. Hope you're enjoying the interview with Trent Cooper, director, Raise the Flags, 50 years of Buccaneers football. All this week, debuting on NFL Network, 8 p.m. Eastern each night. Followed 9 o'clock, second episode, all 10 episodes this week, still on Amazon Prime. And if you think you've heard a little bit of this interview before, maybe you did on WDAE because we aired it on our Joe Bucks Fan show, which you can listen to on Saturday, WDAE. Check JoeBucksFan.com for the time. And thank you, Bill Curry Ford, for presenting the Ira Kaufman podcast. Get shopping all the incredible May offers, BillCurryFord.com. And Florida's Elite Restoration, FloridasEliteRestoration.com. Be prepared for any disaster in your home. Get a free estimate. Call them 24/7 if you have any sort of issue.
There are a few times I wish this was a video podcast. Very few, because I'm not a video guy. You can see me. I'm not video. I'm not made for video.
I would differ. I beg to differ.
But well, okay. I've heard other people say that, but.
He can get the lighting right. He makes you look like George Clooney over there, really. This is a way to do it.
I'd sell for George Costanza. This has been a labor of love for you. I could tell the way you talk. You emit a love.
Exude.
That's a better word. You can just tell the emotion that you have talking about this project. Just talking about the Bucks. Talk about Nickerson. I could tell this was a labor of love for you.
Listen, I love this team, but I also love what I do. So when you put those two things together, it's like 1 + 1 = 7. So, yeah, this is I don't know if it's ever going to get any better for me. This is the dream project.
The word I was thinking of was emote.
Good word.
Emote.
Trent, when you made the initiative to get so-and-so for an interview and a sit-down, and the response was, not going to happen, and I'm thinking of somebody like Bo Jackson. Was that rough for you? Did you keep coming back to it, or did you say,
definitely.
No, I got to give the guy his space. He doesn't want to
give anybody his space. I keep coming back at every angle I got until I run out of time.
I mean, you deal with Bo Jackson a lot, but you don't have Bo Jackson. Right. Did that bother you?
Very much. Very much. I wanted to hear him tell his story. Now, he has told his story only once or twice, by the way. He hasn't told it a lot. But once or twice, he told his half of what happened when
he lost his eligibility for baseball.
So let's give him a little context. So Bo Jackson is coming out in the 1986
draft.
So Bo's coming out, and I'm telling you, generational talent. Go back and look at some of Bo Jackson's highlights from Auburn. I remember this is a great Ed Glazer story. He called me one day and he said, "What's wrong with the Bo Jackson film?" I said, "What do you mean?" He goes, "It's like sped up or something. There's no human being on earth can run that fast."
Remember the one down the left sideline?
Yeah, totally. And I said, "Ed, it's not sped up, but I mean, maybe it is. I don't know. I'll look at it." So, you know, I get on the Zoom with all the editors. I'm like, "Analyze this footage. Is it 23.2397 frames per second? Like, is this sped up?" Everyone's like, "I think it's real." This dude was so fast. And so electric, and his highlights were like jaw dropping. We had him. We had the first overall pick, and we could have had Bo Jackson with Steve Young at quarterback and Jimmy Giles at tight end.
Wow.
Come on,
you
could do some damage.
Wow.
Quick aside: Ohio State has a running back who's decent. Bo Jackson is his name. Every time I hear that name, I just want to throw something at the TV. Yeah. That's not
that
Bo
Jackson. There's only one Bo, and long story short is that Mr. Culverhouse knew that there was a chance that Bo might want to play baseball. And because Bo was just as good a football player, he was just as good a baseball player. And we didn't know if we went ahead and drafted him, what was he going to do? So
So to hedge his bets a little bit, I'm putting words in Culverhouse's mouth, but you know, he arranged for a little bit of a recruiting trip. Let's get Bo to come to Tampa. Let's take him to Burns Steakhouse. Let's introduce him to Steve Young. Let's do all the stuff you do to get Bo excited. And once he kind of meets us all and everything, he's going to
Culverhouse
play.
Paid.
Yeah, and Culverhouse sends a plane for him, wines and dines. Now Bo is still a student at Auburn at the time, and he is gearing up for his senior season of baseball with Auburn, which he wanted. He loved baseball. He's great at baseball. They wanted to win a national championship. Like, this is our year. We got Bo. We're going for it. And Bo was smart enough. He's an incredibly smart guy to sense, is this okay? Am I going to get in trouble if I do this trip? And he checked with someone. I don't know if he checked with Mr. Culverhouse or Mr. Culverhouse's assistant.
Could have been Kruger.
Kruger, the management. Is this okay? Am I going to get in trouble? And they assured him, no problem. Come to Tampa. He comes to Tampa, has a nice time, goes back home, goes to practice on Monday. Coach says, what did you do? He says, what do you mean? He goes, I just got a call from the NCAA. You are ineligible for your entire senior year of baseball because you got on the Bucks private jet.
And that was the end of Bo Jackson.
Well, that was the thing that severed the relationship, which you want to know why I can't get him to sit down with us? He's still mad. How many years has it been? Do the math, Ira.
Steve Young stuff was tremendous.
Yeah,
Trent. A lot of Steve Young on there.
Maybe this will help you out. I was a beat writer for the Royals many moon ago.
Oh, wow.
Bo Jackson was on the team. He was not very cooperative with me at all. So join the club.
Yeah, understood.
All right. So, Trent, this has been incredible. I think we need to do this again to talk more about it, especially after Lee dissects this and wants to bore into you like a mollusk.
I don't know. I don't trust Lee. I feel like he's going to ambush me. He's going to come. He came in hard.
Steve, are you going to fly Lee and I up to New York to do part two with Mr. Cooper?
Yeah, we can all jog together.
I just want to say Stroud's had me on his show probably 8 times in the last couple of years. This is my first time here.
I hope it's not your last.
That's the standard over there.
I'm not sure what the...
What's this email that you sent me?
I'll show it to you.
It might be in my spam.
It's in my bag. It's in my...
All right, continue with the man.
All right. So you're a Bucks fan. And so we love talking to Bucks fans. And the one thing I gleaned from the documentary was Ed Glazer is looking in the camera and he's sort of saying, you know how it is when you're a Bucks fan and you think everything's going wrong. And he sort of like explained or captured in just like 2 sentences some of that Bucks derangement syndrome that goes on.
He calls it PTSD or something. Post-traumatic Bucks syndrome.
Yeah.
I think you're going to see a battered wife syndrome.
It was nice to know that ownership feels that and understands it, you know. But you're a fan. Where are you with this team as a fan who's been a fan for so long? Unless you're corrupted by some sort of a non-disclosure of your feelings agreement.
Have you lost faith, Trent?
Nope.
Cool.
And part of what you learn when you watch this documentary is that we do go through these peaks and valleys, and as fans, we think the sky is falling.
Yes.
I mean, did you think the sky was falling when they lost 34-3 to the Saints with Tom Brady at home in a game they needed in a Super Bowl season?
That's perspective.
I mean, I'm thinking the three of you probably raised all sorts of hell that day about how everybody's got to get fired and blah, blah, blah.
No.
And look, the same.
No. They lost to a great football team. They didn't lose to a terrible football team. It's very different.
Yeah, but we've lost to terrible football teams. Like, it happens. It happens. We're in that little lull.
All right, Trent, I know you got to get rolling, and we could talk Buccaneers on the field all day long, and maybe we'll do that one day. High octane, just on-field stuff, fan-to-sage conversation. Lee, I know you've got one final thought here to share with Trent. And then we'll get rolling, and we're excited. I'm happy for all the fans that get to see Raise the Flags, 50 years of Buccaneers football, directed by Trent Cooper, all week long, Memorial Day week long, NFL Network, 8 o'clock each night, episode at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, set your DVR, and of course, on Amazon Prime. Go ahead, Lee.
What struck me most about our entire sit down here was probably your opening. You said you're a storyteller. That struck me. You're not a director. You're not a filmmaker. You're not a technician. You're a storyteller. So in other words, what's it feel like to know that you right now are basically the Ken Burns of the Bucks? You're the official chronicler of the Bucks. I mean, sir, everybody's going to think of you. When they think of the history of the Bucks, They're going to
Nobody
refer
else
to
is
you.
Going to do this.
They're right? going to refer to you.
Yeah. That's a heavy responsibility, Mr. Cooper.
It's crazy. Go to the end of every episode. You're going to see about 400 people in the credits. All right? I am one of about 400, you know.
What are you, Jason Light over here with the rattling off everybody's name in the front office?
No. But
come
you,
on.
You know,
we're not at the press box.
You just don't know how.
No, I understand.
You have to know how good my editors and shooters are. They're just so good. It feels like shit to take any credit for this. Like, these guys are so good. And work so hard, and honestly, Ed Glaser put a ton of time into this.
Yeah,
maybe he'll win an Emmy. That would
I hope so.
Wouldn't that be
fun.
Something?
I hope so.
How the hell did you get Greg Schiano to sit down, Trent? I'm still working on that one. Greg Schiano, talking about
return. He still returns my text, but not Ira.
That was good visuals. Toes on the line. That was great.
I don't know that Ira's toes are always on the line.
No, definitely not. Definitely.
I feel like we got, you know.
There
I mean?
Is no
How
line.
How many plays did you miss last year, Ira, because your toes weren't on the line?
Four offsides and three holding penalties.
All right, Trent, awesome having you here on the Ira Kaufman podcast. Hope you enjoyed it, and we'll do it again.
Hey, Trent, why do you think, and I used this
what,
the
another
other day,
question we said goodbye.
Why do you think some farmer in Iowa that's not a Buck fan would get something out of this documentary?
What I said in the very beginning, I think it's one of the great stories in sports. And as long as you honor that, it doesn't matter where you live. This is a good story.
All right, Trent, awesome. We'll get our editing team on this. I apologize. What doesn't make the cut?
Yeah.
But it'll be great. We'll all be watching Raise the Flags.
Good.
And we'll, yeah, we will. And we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, guys.